Blog Talk Radio.
To Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, October 20th. Today, our guest is Lisa Comfort. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Why, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
We're so glad to have you. Before we start our interview with you, Lisa, I just want to remind everyone that the call-in number is 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. Also, you can join us as we started something new, and we're on Twitter every Sunday night at 9 as well for our tweet chat, and you can join the conversation using the hashtag Beauty Lounge, all one word, Beauty Lounge, on Twitter. And my sister Denise has joined us tonight, and I believe she has some news to share with us.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Beauty Lounge. Just very quickly wanted to remind you all of IMATS Toronto. IMATS Toronto is November 9th and November 10th at the Metro Toronto Convention Center in Toronto, Ontario. And for more information, you can go to the IMATS website and just click on the tab for Toronto. Again, it's November 9th and 10th. You can go to imats.net for more information. And just very quickly, wanted to congratulate some of our fellow union brothers and sisters on their Emmy Awards. Congratulations goes to, for the hair department, congratulations goes to Francesca Paris, Lisa Deletrier, Sarah Stamp for Boardwalk Empire, Betty Rogers, Jody Mancuso, Inga Thrasher, Jennifer Serio Stouffer, and Kara Hannah Sullivan for Saturday Night Live, Carrie Smith and Kay Giorgio for Behind the Candelabra. In the makeup department, we have Louis Zakarian, Josh Turi, Amy Tagliamonti, Daniela Zivkovic, and Melanie Dimitri for Saturday Night Live, and Kate Bisco, Todd Kleitch, and Stephanie Kelly for Behind the Candelabra.
Nice. And these are all, you said you're our brothers and sisters, these are all from IFC Local 798?
Correct.
Okay. 798. Oh, that's nice to know. Thank you very much. All right. Lisa, again, welcome to the show tonight. We're glad to have you.
Thank you so much.
Can you just start off the conversation tonight just by introducing yourself to our audience, by telling us how you got your start as a manicurist? What inspired you to become a manicurist?
Wow. Okay. So I've been doing nails for 30 plus years. I'm 45 now. So I started in high school. And yeah, you know, it was a passion that I enjoyed doing and something I did just for myself. And really before I was out of high school, I pretty much had a full clientele. So I was a really successful salon technist for years. And then during the age of pink and white acrylic, they actually started while I was a manicurist. It like became very popular, and Tammy Taylor brought it out to the market. So I needed a drill bit to try and do the rebalancing of the nail. So essentially, trying to find different tools, my friend in the drill bit industry who made it for the nail and the dental just said, you know, here, design something and I'll make it for you. So now, you know, that was like, that was over 20 years ago, I want to say, or maybe close to 20 years ago that I invented that. And then, you know, I don't need to tell you, one thing led to another. I ended up working for Easy Flow for 4 years. I was a competitor, and then I trained with all of these top world champions for a long time. And one thing led to another. Now I'm a, you know, competition judge, and I train competitors. That's like my main focus of what I do now as a nail expert. But it all started with a drill bit. It all started with a drill bit. It's like that the drill bit that looks like a upside down top. It's like a diamond shape, you know. I invented that.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
That's what started my whole industry into everything. Was I went from like being a salon tech to that's what I do now because of that drill bit. So you never know what things can bring you. Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you start, you know, when you look at it from that perspective. But in any case, I'm grateful for it.
So how has the industry changed since you first started out?
Wow. Oh, it's changed so much. It's crazy to even consider where we were. I remember when we first started doing a real good metaphor is how we used to have to teach our products. Like when I started even working for Easy Flow back in 99, that was only 14 years ago, we used to have like one of our like real products, like, you know, like the things that would like marketing tools would be, it doesn't crystallize, because crystallization was extremely relevant. That was when our product in really cold temperature would become like really like fogged over and it wouldn't set up right. Yeah, that was like super back then. Now people, if you say crystallization, they're like, huh? What's that? You know, it's like so technology, our polymers have changed, you know, greatly. And, you know, I love when people ask me what's good, what's bad. You know what? They're all good now. So much today that just about most of the products on the market are really good. It's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great. It's a great age to be doing nails now. From what we had to what we have now, there's no comparison. And that's probably the most important, relevant thing. But the technology, the advanced, the variety, the mass variety of what we have. I used to only have, like, I used to compete in the days when we only had, like, black buffing blocks. That was our buffer of choice. I mean, you know what it's like to try and buff a nail smooth with a black buffing block? Not the easiest thing. You're trying to get a high shine, you know, back then. So, we've had a lot of changes in our industry, so I'm so happy to say I'm part of it all. I've been part of a lot of it. You know, I've helped a lot of it. A lot of the things that today we don't, you know, really think about, like, how did that get here, and then how did this get here? You know, I know a lot of the people, and I am part of a lot of those people that helped make all that happen and evolve, because I have been fortunate enough to work with some of the top companies that have, you know, been the innovators. So pinching tongs were something that were never out in the industry. Those are tongs that we use to help in competition to, like, make a C-curve in the nail. Those were never out in the industry. I brought those into the industry, and if people even knew why, it was because my hand was in a cast and I couldn't pinch with both hands. So I used tool that I pulled my drill bit out of my acetone with so I wouldn't ruin my, you know, my nails. My polish wouldn't get destroyed from the acetone. So I would use these tongs to pull out my drill bit, and then when I was in a cast and I had to pinch one day, I was like, oh, here, this will work, and voila, now we have pinching tongs. You know, there have been a lot of those type of little things that happen that have evolved through, you know, not just myself, but a lot of competitors. Competition has driven completely from the onset, has driven our industry to the place that it is at now.
Right.
On many levels.
You have been a part of, I'm going to go as far as saying, you have been a big part of making the industry what it is today. Do you think that there are some things about the nail industry that you don't feel is where it needs to be? Do you think there's anything wrong with the nail industry? Do you see anything? Is there anything that's lacking in the business?
Well, yeah, I mean, where do I begin? Of course. I mean, we're a good industry, and there's a lot of things about us that are, in my opinion, amazing. But, you know, like anything, I mean, like, nothing's perfect. I mean, I think if you wanted me to pinpoint one of our major problems, and it's controversial at that, is we're talking about just the nail industry. One of our biggest problems is that we in America all, we are the only country in the whole world, by the way, that has, like, licensing, that people have to go to school and then they get their license. And that's a good thing on many levels. That is a good thing. But on the other side, because of it, all of the state boards are controlled through state legislation. And that means there's a lot of, legislative steps that have to happen in order to get, like, rules and laws changed. You know, California, for one, up until recently, the only people that were allowed to legally teach the nail program were cosmetologists. And in our state, you have, like, 100 hours of nails in your 1,600-hour program. So, I mean, how much education does a cosmetologist have to teach people how to do good quality nails? Not much. They don't even have the interest, really, you know? But, you know,
right.
Kind of things. It's like they gear you up to teach you how to, like, pass state board and how to do it safely and with sanitation, but then after that they kind of throw you out there, and, you know, there's not a lot of good American education out there right now. There's no real leaders out there pushing education to the forefront right now at all. I mean, I feel almost like coming back and looking at what's happening in the American industry, like, oh, my God, I turned my back for a few years, and what happened? Everybody's doing, like, these crazy nails now. Like, I feel like someone needs to hone in and teach people how to do some really basic, important things that I'm just not seeing out of the leading educators. So I feel like, you know, back in the days, there were some serious leaders that helped guide us, and those people were the champion nail artists. But today, that's not necessarily the case, because the champion nail artists, they're not really leading the domestic market nail-wise. They're out doing international education because those are the top dogs for the company. They're not their, you know, basic, you know, domestic educators. So, you know, you really kind of don't have anybody on this side right now that's willing to step up and say, okay, let me show you guys how to do it right. You know, let me, you know, fundamentals that are so necessary. There are so many things that I'm missing. And then, of course, you know, the state board side of it all is they don't even have a clue about what's going on. They just want you to polish a nail red properly and give the person a manicure if the state's been lucky enough to update some of their laws. They might even include gel at this point, but most of them don't. I know California doesn't have gel on a test and at all, on the written or on the practical. Gel can cause damage on so many levels on the nail plate. If it's applied too thick, if it's gel that sets up too fast, it can burn the nail plate, permanently damaging it. Don't you think that there are a little bit of things that we should know as a state? I mean, we don't have any of those rules. They can go and use a drill the minute they're done getting their license, and there's nothing to teach them how to use a drill. So do you know how many people are out there using, like, carbide bits? And the consumer, they walk into these salons and they see those licenses, and you know what they think? Oh, they're safe and they're sanitary and they've been certified. That state sure is protecting me. And guess what? No, they're not. They're not protecting anybody. They're just giving you a false sense of security, and then all of a sudden they use a drill bit on you and then, you know, tear your nail off. You know, and listen, I am an advocate of electric files. I am a master, and this is what I teach. I've done numerous videos and articles, inventions, and I will tell anybody any day of the week that electric filing, when done right, is 10 times better than the hand file, and I could give you 20 arguments for it. But when it comes down to it, there's no required education, but yet they're allowed to under the fact that there's nothing. It's kind of a gray area. So because they don't even identify with it being there or not being there, they're just allowed to use it by default, when essentially they should probably have a lot more licensing for that and, you know, lessons in that than they should before polishing a nail, you know. But whatever, that's my point on legislation and licensing. I teach around the international circuit, and we don't have those problems internationally. We only have those problems here because of the government getting a little bit too involved. So it would be nice to see that they would come and step up and say, okay, how can we make this a little bit better, and let's try and get that the standards are a little bit more broad. So, but on that note, you know, that's just one of the many things that could be fixed. Competition, on the other hand, is another major factor here. Our industry is driven through competition. Our industry started through competition. Anybody that knows anything about how competition started, like, for example, The company Gelish Harmony, okay? You have no idea how many hundreds of millions that company is doing, right? You know, I mean, God knows, I don't either, but I can only assume through my knowledge of business. The founder is a world champion, Danny Hale. He's my mentor, one of my mentors. And, you know, he probably wouldn't be sitting there today if he hadn't started as a competitor and got his name famous, and then people started liking his brand, Easy Flow. And then he built that up, sold it, and turned around, made the money necessary to start a real, you know, makeup company. Look where he is today. All of it is because he's a competitor. So when you consider all of, like, the biggest people in our industry today, those people have all started through the competition world. So it's important. You know, it's a really important factor. I mean, this gives people the spotlight and gives them the opportunity to pull away from behind the desk and the table and get out there and help guide our industry and be, you know, leaders in showing them how to be innovators and do things different and better and set a standard and a higher bar. You know, all of these things are so relevant and so important. So when we're lacking in competition, when we're lacking in these competition, I guess you could call them heroes or you know, megastars, it gives you a big sense of what's going on. Why are we lacking in education? Why is all this happening? Because there are some good we do have a couple of good competitors, but even they aren't, like I said, they're not getting as much exposure as they used to, the old timers used to. You know, back in the days, if you were a hotshot, you know, competitor, it was a big deal. Not today, it's not that big of a deal. There's like 10 people that show up at the competitions. And, you know, that's partly because, you know, what's going on in our industry, we don't really have a lot of competitions out there like we used to. So we're limited by that. We're limited by the fact, you know, when you think about it, there's only really one circuit of nail competition in America today, and, you know, one that people are recognized and knowing about. And if you don't subscribe to the magazine that is going that runs the competition, it's kind of hard to even know about it. And since you know, there's two major competition nail magazines in our industry, one of them is not going to go and support the other magazine for their competition. So, you know, if you're not subscribing to the other magazine, how are you supposed to know about it? It just limits things. You understand what I'm saying? It would be a lot easier if we had all these big independent competitions. It would be a lot easier for Americans to be like, oh, well, I didn't do this one, but I could do that one. So, you know, it pushes our industry. It's good for our industry. It gives our industry something to, you know, drive for and hope for and motivates them to do better work. So I'm really, really hoping that we'll start to see a change with my TV show that I've been working and developing with Oxygen Network. So we'll see what happens. But that's a competition-driven reality show that will hopefully be on the air sooner than later. We'll see what happens. But
right. Wow. I mean, just with that one question, you've said so much. I have so many questions.
I'm sorry, I talk a lot too, but it's hard to answer my questions in a small, you know, it's a broad topic for me especially. It's a broad topic, but you can see that it's not something that I don't have a lot of thought behind. You know, I'm very clear in knowing what's going on behind this industry. This is my passion and my this is something that I endlessly dedicate my life to. And I know all aspects of it inside and out. So, you know, you could ask me one question and set me on an hour-long roll into from one thing to another. But anyway.
And it's quite all right, too. Let me just go back just a little bit. The very first part of that answer, you know, you talked about the state boards and the lack of great educators. Are you familiar with the issue that some states are trying to get rid of that license for nail techs? I mean, not nail techs, but just in general, everybody. No license for cosmetology at all.
Yeah, I've heard about it.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think that, one, skin care and hair care are totally different than nail care. So I don't think that skincare or hair care should even be discussed. I mean, they need a lot of strict regulating and guiding. There's a lot of chemicals that are being used there. And granted, we have it too. But I think that if they are planning on keeping
the regulations the way they are now, then we'd be better off getting away with them. If they were willing to, like, fix the problems and update the rules and address the real serious, you know, problems that we're seeking now that are, then I'd say we should, you know, try and regulate it. It's always better to be regulated. But, you know, if they're not willing to put the time, effort, and proper money behind it and stuff, it's pointless. We're wasting our money. Right now it's failing. So right now we're wasting our money. Fix it, and then it's not a waste of money for the states to be paying. There you go. You know, summarize it.
Gotcha. So you were saying earlier when you talked about that, so basically when you're in these other countries, they don't have a license.
No, they don't. None of the states do. There are some countries, I mean, none of the countries do. There are some countries that are starting to get a little bit of regional requirements, but, you know, nothing really official yet. No other country.
So
and
there's
the
no
standard
license
of nails. Yeah, I'm sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, there's no licensing, but how they go about doing it is that you kind of govern yourselves in the sense where, let's say you want to become a nail tech. Well, you're going to go to the school that has the teacher with the most certificates, the most awards, the most accomplishments, you know, and that's where you're going to get your best education. So those who are doing it the best are going to be the most successful, and the ones that aren't doing it well, they're going to eventually, like, go away or shut down because people are not going to countries are smaller. There's a lot more condensed. So you can have, you know, it's funny, like when I'm here in America, when I see someone with good nails, I'm like, oh, look at you. Your nails are good. Let me see. That's like a big deal to me. When I'm in Europe, it's crazy. When I'm in Europe, everybody's nails look nice because, like, everybody does better work. The standard's higher. Everybody goes out of their way to make sure the nails look good or you don't get customers. You know, we don't have that competition of just you're going to outprice each other. They can't afford to outprice each other. Products are costing too much, and education costs a lot, rent costs a lot. They can't just, like, discount themselves away. They have no choice but to step up and do better work, or people aren't going to come to them, you know? So it kind of governs itself in the sense of the standard stays higher this way because people are only going to those that are good. You know, when you think about it that simple, you know, like in that simple term, wow, not such a hard thing to put your mind around. Like, if my work isn't good, I won't get customers. There you go. That's a good way to make sure you're doing good work. But now everybody just assumes that everybody's good because the state said you are good by giving you that license. You know, it's a total false pretense. You know, like people are walking in just assuming, oh, okay. That works that way, by the way, in a lot of different fields, too, like dentistry, I've learned, unfortunately.
Right. Before we get into the Nail Olympics, because I had a lot of questions there, talk a little bit about the reality show, how all of that came about, and what we can expect.
Okay, so how it came about was in February, we had launched our first Nail Olympics in Italy, and the promoter is really good with public relations, and the Associated Press showed up. And through that, they televised the interview, and I guess it must have been a pretty boring, you know, time in America because it, like, got really it went viral, and it got all over, like, Huffington Post, USA Today. Everywhere picked it up. It was an interesting story. Long story short, the producers that I'm working with, they were just going through looking about stuff with nail salons because they were trying to pitch a nail salon show, and they stumbled upon the Nail Olympic thing in the Huffington Post, and they read it, and they contacted me, and then, you know, one thing after another, now I'm working with them, and we're in development with Oxygen, and Oxygen Network bought the development rights about, like, 3 or 4 months ago, I'd say now. It's all a big blur because I've been working so hard on it. But it's we'll see what happens. We're still in the development phase, but we just did one of our proof of concept shows, which means Oxygen in their development phase has asked us to put together, like, a mock show with, like, a couple of contestants. So we have people there doing their competition. And then that way Oxygen can take a look at it and say what works and what doesn't work. And then from there, it will make it easier for us to finish our casting and doing, you know, getting our sets ready, like that. So It's hard to say how long it's going to take, but, you know, I know that, you know, there's still quite a long process to go. I would say maybe we'll start filming in hopefully January. Like next year's been in the air, so we'll see what happens. It should be really good, though. I mean, the proof of concept was exciting. There was really great, you know, nail art, and the people that were on the show were really talented, so I'm expecting that people won't be bored, that's for sure. You know, there's a lot of visual element that people are just, you know, dying to see. I'm sure you know about Instagram,
right,
and all the people in the nail art, the craze out there. So this is all based around nail art, flat nail art, dimensional nail art, and contestants who are really, really talented and capable of doing these incredible builds. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm very excited about it.
So am I, but since you mentioned Instagram, let me ask. I can only imagine, because you've been all over the world with Nail Olympics and all the competitions, and we're getting ready to get into that. But so you know what a competitor should look like, and since you just mentioned Instagram, I just have to say that I'm almost sure that the competition for this nail show is going to have to be way more than what we see on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. In fact, if you want to get more of a sample of what the art will be like, if you go on my Instagram, which is just Lisa Comfort, LysaComfort, if you go on my Instagram, I have a few examples of, like, the Nail Olympics art that you'll see, and it's going to be more like that level. We're talking about stuff that you see more in real competition. Stuff that is, high-level nail art, not just your standard, like, stripes and you know, lips and dripping, you know, Chanel C's, stuff like that. You know, it's going to be things that are more, canvases that are complete, you know, scenes that are done, and nails that tell story from nail to nail, and dimensional work that will be, like, you know, coming off the nail over, you know, some of the pieces 1-2 inches off the nail. Things like that. So you'll see, you know, I'm telling you, you're going to see stuff that people won't even believe. Like, they're not going to wear that. I'm like, no, they're not going to wear that. This is just an art. Maybe the flat art. You're gonna see, yes, that will be worn. But the stuff that you're going to see that the contestants do, no, those things, like those models could not even, like, move. We had to get those nails off before they could even, like, you know, touch their phone to take a picture of their nails. It was crazy.
Right.
But that's okay. You know, that's what's so cool about it. Right? People will see that there's a whole new, another element to art that, when it comes to nails, that they had no idea that was there. And there's going to be so much visual that people are going to want to see more and more of it. It's not going to be something you're going to get sick of seeing.
Right. Can we expect some celebrity judges or... appearances of some sort?
Yeah, they have that definitely in their lineup. I mean, I'm not allowed to talk about it yet, but one of them, they just told me that they're talking to, is a really big one. So she'll be, I'm sure, if we get her, that will, like, you know, don't be surprised if the show name changes to, like, her name's nail competition because she's that big.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm, like, she'll be that big, so... You know, I don't know, though. That's all, like, you know, the big wig talk. I just get to hear a little bit of that here and there. I'm a producer on the show, but I'm, like, a producer by default just because I'm the creative. I'm the person that's conceptually brought the show together. So when it comes down to it, I'm very behind in the whole producer world, and I just try my hardest to, like, put a big smile on my face, and whatever they ask, I do, and learn along the way because this is a whole new project and journey for me. Quite an experience, at least. Yeah.
But would you say this is a dream come true for you?
Yeah,
in some
definitely.
Way?
One of my dreams. I mean, I have honestly, I have a little bit bigger than this. I want to actually use this as a foundation so that people can start recognizing nails as a sport. And ultimately, I would like to my goal is to standardize nail competition globally. And then turn it into kind of like a sport like you would see the same as, like, let's say, world poker or billiards, something like
that.
Right. know, I want to kind of turn it into one of those, you know, standardized, globalized sports. So it's a big job I have, but I think that it could happen. Maybe give it 5 more years to evolve. It could happen. We'll see.
Right.
I'm working. Big job ahead, though.
Now, how did you get involved with the Nail Olympics?
Well, I was working at Easy Flow when it started, and Easy Flow was the company that helped it start. It was Easy Flow and IBD before they were owned by AII, and another company called Too Much Fun, and they were the three companies that were, like, backing it and supporting it with Nails Magazine behind them. And then I was a judge the first year, and then the second year they asked me to be the head judge. And then from there, I just, you know, it's kind of like my duty, so I just stuck with it, and I just have been the head judge ever since. After Vegas was, Vegas had a show that was like nothing, and then we brought Nail Olympics there, and within like 3 years, Vegas became like the biggest show in all of the country, and the next thing you know, boom, IBS bought the Vegas show. So when IBS bought the Vegas show, IBS had already been hosting a lot of Nail Pro competitions, and they didn't really know much about the show or what happened with, you know, why that show was 65% of a nail show at their, you know, their IBS shows are usually hair, not nails. And we lost the competition space. So we were in London for like, we're still in London, and London is doing really well. But right now I'm not part of London. London's kind of doing their own thing, and I'm doing my own thing. But I have it right now successful in 6 other countries, and we're getting ready to launch in like 3 more countries. It's coming in 14. So, you know, I'm expecting to hopefully get it standardized and around the entire globe by, you know, maybe 18. It's a big job, but I'm getting all of the hot spots taken care of as we speak. I'm going to all the main countries and getting them established.
Wow.
Yeah, next up, Russia. Yeah. I have plans on Russia. Russia's a hot spot for competition, very, very big competition spot.
So walk us through what happens at Nail Olympics.
Okay, so Nail Olympics is, obviously, it's an international competition, and it has three divisions, although we're entering our 4th division this year, and that will be a division solely for students only. Since we have a different standard of doing things on an international level, like the international world does it one way, we do it our own way here in America. So for those students internationally, we're doing this new student division. And then we have other divisions like Division 1 for people who have competed but never won, Division 2 for people who have trophied but never taken first place, and then Masters is for people who have taken, you know, first place and winner of winners and things like that. So like the kind of the Masters category. And then we have eight competitions, from like your traditional French pink and white competition to fantasy nail art, nail embellishment, soak off gel, all different types of art competitions. We change them up a lot. And basically we have team trophies. We have winner of winner trophies. We give, you know, nice cash prizes. And it is done and operated all from an organization that I started called INJA. And INJA is the International Nail Judges Association. So it's really, really, really protected. Like, there's no chance that any kind of cheating can happen behind the judges area, because we have a system that's designed that's, like, foolproof. We have back judges watching the front judges so that no one can upscore. Each nail is scored on 1-point criteria. So, for example, your nail polish, if you have 5 nails polished, you have 5 points available to get. Each finger must meet the criteria that's listed, and if it does, it gets its point. If it doesn't, it's zeroed out. So there's no, like, why did I get a 4? Well, look at your score sheet. You have a 0 here, a 1 here. This is why you got your 4. So it's very clear. Competitors understand fully what they're getting and what they're doing. The criteria is very, very laid out for them so that they know how to earn their points when they want to. There's no guessing game in what the judge's opinion is all about. It's all very technical. So this is something that's very appealing. You know, I don't need to tell you. This is very helpful to the competitor. A lot of competitions Only the top 10 competitors are even given a score sheet. So when you consider, like, how do I even get to the top 10, you know, that makes it really difficult to get to your next level or to make it as a competitor who's successful. Some people are discouraged by this, and they don't even want to compete as a result. Nail Olympics, you have, like, the chance to go from the next division to the next, to be part of a team that won, to one, and, you know, you can have 8 different competitions that you can go in. There's just a lot more variety and options and opportunity and clarity in what they're doing. You know, it's a learning experience while they're actually competing. So it's very successful as a result. I'm looking forward. I have next week, I have got Nail Olympics Asia, which is hosted in Seoul, Korea.
Wow. How did nails and nail art get so big in other parts of the world?
Well, you know, it's like anything. It's like it's consumer-driven. The difference between what happens globally and what happens domestically is, like, we here are a professional industry, so we're kind of more our industry focuses on the professional consumer, on the professional, not the consumer. On the international market, you don't have to have a license, so there's not that clear of a division, you know. So you have a broader open path between the two. The consumer market and the professional market are kind of intertwined to a degree. In Japan, for example, they have like 5 or 6 magazines that are on the newsstand, the consumer newsstand, and they're just loaded with like how to do your own, you know, how to do your own nails, gel, acrylic, how to make a competition nail, how to, you know, little prizes inside. Superstar nail artist. I have a girlfriend there that's like such a mega superstar. She literally has been licensed out by Sanrio to have her own Hello Kitty. I mean, she's really famous. So the opportunities to reach the mass and the public are so much bigger than they are in our market. I mean, our market is so much more limited by what the professionals do and don't see. I mean, up until recently, we're starting to open up more to that, but that's been, you know, driven through social media, of course. But the international market, it's all been always just kind of one. You know, one has been part of the other, and they drive each other, you know, hand in hand. So a lot easier to make a stronger name for yourself and to get out there. And when you're trying to push your name past another person, one of the best ways to do it is by doing, like, better nail art or prettier designs. You know, people are a lot more into fashion there. The nails are an individual way to represent what you have of your own. So that's a very big deal. What everybody wants to do something that only they do and that's theirs and that's unique and special. Nails is by far one of the leading ways to represent yourself as an individualist. So I'm sure you can. Yeah, and the nail art there is just amazing, astounding. There's such incredibly talented, driven nail artists coming out of Europe right now and in Asia, out of Asia.
What makes a great nail competitor?
Consistency. Most definitely consistency. Strategy. You know, a lot of people that are competing, I shouldn't say a lot of people, most people, like 90% of the competitors when they compete, like let's say the division between first place, second place, third place, there's only usually like 1 or 2 points, you know. They're all really tight in there. And, you know, it is always divided between a couple of categories. And those are like the ones that are the easiest to kind of overlook, the nail polish or the length of the nails where they have to be matched up, like to match each finger, like really right on point. It's never about like the style or the smile lines or anything like that. If you're good enough to get your points high enough to be a winner, you generally have beautiful smile lines or great C curves or all of the other, like, you know, criteria that's so important. It's always the little tiny things. So I always say a good competitor is someone that knows how to strategically win, where to earn the most points, how to make sure that they're forgetting the small, minute details and focusing on the big picture, you know, and staying consistent. So working in a system that gives you the best results consistently, you know, like filing every nail portion in the same method, the same way, instead of like filing one nail and then one nail, you know, just like take the same side over and over and over again, like, replicate what you're doing. It will give you the most right on point nail. So when I see a competitor doing that, then I know they're in it. When I see that, like on the floor, or if I happen to get a chance to train with somebody and they know how to pick up a strategy and a system, that is the competitor to watch out for. Not the one that makes the prettiest pictures on Insta or on Facebook or whatever. Those are great. But, you know, like, show me the backsides of your nails. Did you clean out the desk? Because there's 10 points right there. You know, you can lose your points. If you have dust underneath one of your nails, you will lose your point. To not remove your dust is like a total amateur move. So I'll see nails come through all the time that would be really, really pretty, and then boom, dust behind the back. So, yeah. I would say more than anything, yeah, strategy. Strategy, consistency, practicing, being strong, knowing how to get through the day without losing your energy, all very important things.
Wow. And how long does the competition normally last since you need all this energy?
It depends on which one, but the ones that are the longest are like Stiletto Nail Art. That's like a 3-hour competition. And in Stiletto Nail Art, they do 10 nails where they're putting design work inside the nail, like application, like with gel or acrylic, and then they're also doing a little bit of art on top. So that one's usually like a 3-hour comp. And then, your basic pink and white acrylic, your traditional like world championship comp, that's a 2.5-hour comp. So that's a long one. All the rest of them are usually 2 hours and under. It's a long day, though. I mean, you can only imagine it's a very long day at Nail Olympics. You can do, like, 3 competitions, 4 competitions in one day. So by the end of the day, people are burnt out. They either, like, fall apart or they end up getting better at the end of the day. That's what separates the good from the bad, definitely, is, like, how they're doing at the end of the day.
So they are, if I understand you correctly, they're doing the different categories of the competition, and then they're being judged at the end of the day after they've done, you know, each category?
Yeah. Like, for example, the first one of the morning is soak-off gel. It's an hour-long competition, and then at the end of the hour, the models have to go and have their hands through on a panel with judges that have, you know, sit behind a curtain so they can't see the competitors or the models' faces, you know. And the numbers are changed out, so there's no way that, you know, one model could, you know, be told beforehand to the judge what kind of, you know, what their number is. We do all sorts of things to make sure that there's no cheating, because we don't want anyone questioning the integrity of what's going on. But, yeah, so, like, the competitor could be already on to their next competition, and their model is not even through the curtain yet because they're one after another. There's not much time in between to set up. You have, like, 30, 40 minutes to prepare, usually. So it's tiring. It's extremely exhausting.
Wow.
Yeah, you got to come check it out.
Yes. What would you say is one of your favorite, of all the countries, what's, like, one of your favorite?
Places to come for the competitions?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nail Olympics Asia is by far my favorite when it comes to the talent, because the Koreans and the Japanese and stuff, they can really, like, do things that most can't do. And as far as, like, hotspot, like, the best place to go, I don't know. You know, I'm starting to think Madrid. That was our first year this year. And it was so fabulous that when I got home the first night, I had to, like, write a list of reasons why Madrid was so fabulous, because there was just nothing bad to say about it. The show was fabulous. The competition floor was great. Everything they did good. They didn't mess up on one thing. Everything, like, just rolled beautifully. The location, the Madrid itself, I mean, my God, Madrid's so beautiful. So everything, I can't say enough beautiful things about that show. That was a great, great show. And, yeah, but when it comes to the talent and, like, getting to see, like, the real, like, when they really bring out the best work, oh, God, that would be this weekend. Incredible work will be we'll see incredible stuff out of the Asians they're always, you know, really good at doing art, as you can imagine.
Right. Now, and you talked a little earlier about the lack of great education here in the U.S., where they're required to have licenses, and then in other parts of the world where they're not really required to have a license, but you feel like the education is better.
Yeah, it's just like anything with demand, you know. I'm sure most people will tell you that when they go to nail school, they're really only taught to pass the board for safety and sanitation. You know, there's nobody that's ever really, like, they're not really focusing on the element of the art of making a good nail, making, you know, properly. So, you know, it stands to reason when you think about it that way. You know, if you're not even focusing on how to do it well, how are you expected to even be compared to the countries that that's all they focus on? You know, the people that are going to classes and trying to set classes, that's always what that's their main focal point is who can make the nail look the prettiest, and that's who's going to come, you're going to get customers, you know. That's, the bottom line is pretty nails equal good business, at least out of the country.
The education in other parts of the country, do you hear about, or do you often, you know, see some of the actual educators, like, at these competitions? Do you ever hear about the classes that's being offered?
I do sometimes. And I'm not saying there's not some good education out there. There is. I mean, there is definitely some out there, but I'm talking more, even I should say, you know, competition-focused. You know, people that are really, like, top competitors that can offer good competition training. Most of the top competitors that are out there, I'm sure that they're doing a little bit of education here or there, but nothing like on a big, major global scale. I mean, not like, I should say national scale. I mean, at least not that I've seen. I look at the magazines, and I follow Facebook a lot. I have a lot of friends on there, so I do try to keep up with it. But, yeah, not like the old days, at least. Not, you know, I mean, I came from the generation when all the top people were doing academies, and it was a big deal to go see all of the big guys, you know, and everybody went. So a little shift. It's just definitely a shift.
You know, I'm thinking back to when I took my state board exam for nails back in 1999, and you're right. I mean, it was the majority of that test was sanitation, and I'm, like, studying for days thinking that I'm going to have to, you know all of this stuff, and probably, I don't remember how many questions there were, but maybe a good 10 questions was on everything else, and all the rest of them were on sanitation. And I walked out of there like, wow. Yeah.
And the same questions over and over again, asked different ways.
Yeah, just different ways. So I can, I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying. You're right.
Exactly. And it's a shame.
And then
you know, we deserve more, don't we?
Absolutely. I agree. And the nail, the lady who owned the school, the nail tech, she worked a lot with OPI. And listening to her talk, she talked a lot about, you know, the nail industry and the competition. So everything you're saying, I do remember. But like you said, you don't really hear that now. But a lot of your top people in the industry started off in competition.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can Yeah, so, I mean, I know exactly what you're saying.
It's a shame. I would like to see something shift. I'm hoping, even as idealistic as it sounds, I'm hoping that maybe the show will help. Maybe that will encourage people to go out and seek out more. You know, when there's a demand for things, there's usually a response. You know, a lot of these companies out there, they kind of aren't providing it because there isn't a huge demand for it. So once maybe that starts to change, you know, maybe once we start to see people, like, really wanting to seek out some of the competition-style work that might be shown on the TV show, you know, I think that we'll start to see it. Yes. I mean, there's definitely educators out there that can do it. There's a lot of great people there that I've had the opportunity to train that I know lots of really, really good educators. I'm just not seeing them getting out there and really focusing on, you know, pushing competition at all.
Right.
And I
understand
why. It's understandable to me, but somewhere it's got to start. So maybe the next step for me is to bring Nail Olympics back here and try and do another USA Nail Olympics so that I can get the internationals out here and show everybody
right.
in America what we're capable of doing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exciting. I was going to ask about the international competitions. Are there a lot of participants from the U.S.?
No.
In those competitions?
Not at all,
huh?
No.
Wow.
I would say one of the only ones that we really see that come out, Trang Nguyen, who owns Odyssey, he competes still, and he's by far one of our best out there, and he's, thank God, he's still pushing and teaching people how to do great nails. But Allie Baker, she's a tough competitor. I'll see her occasionally on the international circuit. She won the Invitational this year. So, there's a big competition that happens in Munich every year, and the winner from every country goes to that competition. Last year there were three entries. Last year we Americans had three entries, okay? Repeat, three entries. There's something wrong with that. You go to, like, Italy, and there's like four, and there's like an island of them, 150 of people competing to go to that spot. We had three entries. So this year I think we had more, like six entries, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm really happy to say Allison Baker won it. So she is going next weekend to that competition. So there we go. We have an American leaving the country to compete right now. That's a big deal. I mean, it's not one of those things that, if you talk about international competitions outside of America, that's so something you couldn't even, say one person. I mean, there's just even, for Spain the first year, we had people in from Japan, China, Serbia, Venezuela, Argentina, Poland, of course, Italy, Russia, Ukraine, we had them from everywhere, everywhere, but there were no Americans, Latin Americans, of course, from people that were there, but not USA Americans, not a one, sad to say. Hmm. But hopefully that will change next year. We'll see what happens, right?
Right.
We have a new, it's going to be a coming of season for 2014, I'm hoping, in that Nail Olympics, nail competitions in general are going to become a really big, and they're going to make their space here in America again, I'm hoping. We'll see what happens, but I have to find a good location first. I need to find a show I can have my competition at. So far, it has not been an easy job to try and find one that will be willing to host it.
We'll talk after the show about that one.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Nail competitions alone seems like it's a lot of work on the competitors' part. But what about the judges? How do you prepare for those shows?
For me, it's a lot of responsibility because I'm always a head judge. Mainly, what the hard part is on me is making sure that all the competitors are really understanding what we as judges want. So I really try to get out there and make sure that the floor judges are doing their part and communicating with the competitors. I mean, people kind of forget about that part, the link between the competitor and the judge. That has to be very open and transparent for them, and they have to feel comfortable coming to us. So I'm kind of that person, that spokesperson, the liaison that communicates with the competitors and makes them feel reassured that they're being treated fairly, they're understanding the rules. But then as a judge, the part that we have to go through, first they have to be qualified to be a judge when you're doing the Olympics. So they have to have certain credentials, and then they have to go through an INJA training program, which is the association I told you about. That's like
right.
a 3-day program, and they have to take exams and practical and written exams to prove that they know how to judge. And
oh,
then
nice.
once they've made it to that point, excuse me, I'm getting over pneumonia still.
Oh, wow.
I got sick in Italy. Yeah, it was terrible. In the meantime, they have to pass an exam that proves that they know what they're doing. And then from that point, they have to start as a floor judge. So the first year they have to go to Nail Olympics and just they have to work the floor and take care of, like what I had just mentioned, making sure that the communication and all the standards are met. Pardon, I'm so sorry.
No problem.
And then after that, they go to the next level, which is like they'll judge the students and the Division One judges. I mean, one Division One competitors. And then they also get to stand behind the international judges. So, you know, the junior judges, like the earlier judges, they're the ones doing a lot of the work because they're out there for all the competitions. They rotate between floor judge and back bar, you know, back judge.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bouncing around watching all the internationals to make sure that, A, they're learning from us, and then they're also seeing and confirming that, you know, even, you know, it's easy for a person after a while to, like, lose their sight and lose their eye. You know, it's always good to have those extra set of eyes behind you going, like, yeah, I see it. Do you see it? Yeah, good. Okay, get this point. You know, so they're doing all those things. The international judges, well, they're the ones that are sitting there, like, having to go through 80 and 90 people and do the same criteria as, like, 3 or 4 criteria over and over and over again. And it's one nail, one finger, one point. So, you know, it doesn't seem like it's such a hard job, but trust me, it is. They have to, like, look carefully and have, like, really, you know, I bring my magnifiers. And there's a lot of, you know, detail involved. So, and it seems like it would
right.
be crazy, but, yeah, there's a lot of effort that goes into it.
Wow.
It's fun, though. You know, it's a rewarding job. It is a very rewarding job. And I take a lot of pride in trying to represent an organization that has really transparency and integrity, and we're really trying to just protect the competitor. Now, people don't realize that there's so much money that it costs to get into this sport. That just going to the international events, they have to, you know, oftentimes bring their model and pay flight and hotel, and the entry fees are expensive. All of these things add up. You know, a person in a country that's not making all that much money, it adds up for them. Some of these countries, they have to, you know, the competitors are saving up for like a year before they can save up enough to go. So, you know, you want to make sure that they're being treated fairly and that they're getting their opportunity to show their work and, you know, be treated, you know, with, you know, fairness, most importantly, and earn, you know, getting what they earn or, you know, at least understanding when they walk away what they did right and wrong, I mean, at the very least.
Right,
so,
exactly.
You know, yeah, so
it makes them a better competitor, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's how you learn. Walk away,
mm-hmm.
you look at your score sheet, you can evaluate for yourself through looking at your own nails and see exactly what you've done right and what you've done wrong. This is how you get better. So I would like to think that we keep improving our methods and trying to teach the competitors how to get better just by offering, you know, more detailed criteria and pictures online that, you know, just that are really, like, you know, specific for each criteria so they can see, like, oh, when you're talking about the arch location being in this zone, that's the zone you're talking about. You know, these are all tools
right.
that help guys that are, you know, not able to get out the, you know, get the professional training that are generally the most, you know, the top competitors are getting before they compete.
Right. I was gonna ask something about the, I remember you saying earlier, you know, there's trophy, there's, you know, there's money involved. The winner.
Mm-hmm.
What's the winner, and do you award, like, a runner-up, or is it just the winner who's getting
No. We, you know, the cash prize goes generally just to, like, the winner of winners because we put a big cash prize on it. So, like,
mm-hmm.
each division has their top winner, and that person
okay.
gets the big money, and that's the incentive to compete on all the competitions. It kind of pushes them to do them all. And depending on which division, there's more money based on each division, you know. Some of them are just based on the master's division. But generally, you know, the prices are sometimes up in, like, the $1,000 range. So there's, you know, it's good incentive. But more importantly, the incentive is that if you're a champion, then you're going to probably get picked up by a nail company that wants to hire you and, you know, give you your academy and give you your own, you know, sponsorship. And then you're doing classes that you're making a lot more money at them. And, you know,
right.
And they tell you the door's open big time. So, yeah, they're definitely motivated by the money, but they're really motivated by the, you know, the potential to get further career, you know, through
right.
the market.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, so just listening to that, it seems like that would be a great incentive, and I'm thinking about the American nail artist. Just that alone to me would make me want to go for the nail competitions. And like I said, I know it can be expensive getting to the places, bringing a model and all of that, but sounds like it's really worth it when you're talking about furthering your career.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just like anything. You know, when you've invested in your career is going to, you know, you're going to get further just by the sake of having the education, the experience. These are all things that help provide credentials to, you know, your resume. So I think it's really important. And I think that for more than any other reason, competition is really good because it teaches you how to be a little bit more strategic behind the table. Most competitors are able to really hone in on their skill in the salon because they've mastered, you know, the hard things. So when it comes down to going into a salon, your salon standards get raised greatly, you know, so that in itself gives you more clients. The better your work
right.
is, the more clients you're going to get. So there's benefits on every side of it. It's something that I believe is almost like good for you to personally challenge yourself and to keep you pushing yourself so that you don't get comfortable in what you're doing. I know a lot of people that are, like, unwilling to, like, recognize the fact that they haven't done, you know, gone to a single class in 15 or 20 years, but they don't understand why their clients' nails are lifting or while this is happening or that is happening. And you're like, hello, look at your nails. What's going on here? But they're like, oh, I've been doing people forever. I know what I'm doing. Well, like anything, you know, it's important to, like, keep up your craft and keep making sure that you're staying on top of whatever's going on in your industry. So there's no chance that you can be a competitor and not be on top of everything you're doing. You know, that this is a strong key to keeping you in check with the, you know, your application and your work as a nail salon, studio nail tech. But I think that we'll see, hopefully, maybe we'll start to see small competitions start around America that could really encourage people that are maybe not even competitors like what we're used to seeing. Maybe we'll be able
right.
to start seeing your salon tech go out and do some of the smaller competitions, and that itself will help, help industries and their small communities rise up. Anything to me
right.
is a good good opportunity for our industry.
Absolutely. And I know you want to take nail competitions all over the world, but what else would you like to see for the nail industry?
Wow. I mean, there's a lot of things I'd like to see for the nail industry. I'd like to see, and it's in the domestic market, I would really like to see a good standard of, like, a nail chain, a salon that would step up somehow and become, like, a chain that is, like, a really high standard, so no matter what chain salon you go into, if you're going to that one, they're going to have your profile on hand, and you're going to feel like the customers are part of a system where everybody's caring for them. I'd love to see nail school step up because there's a driven demand for it. I would love to see the nail industry take more nail space, more shelf space in the beauty supply stores. You know, right.
Oh,
right. Now I would we're taking, like, maybe 15-20% of the shelf space up. I would love to see that expand because that will help drive our market.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love more than anything, I think, to see the nail salon, the nail store come back. What happened to the nail beauty, like not the beauty supply store, but the place where you just went to go get nail supplies, the nail supply store. We used to have
those,
and they're gone. You know, there are a few of them. I mean, they're around. They're still around. And I've actually found a gem of one in my neighborhood, but not in my neighborhood, but like in L.A., a 20-minute drive, 30-minute drive, but that's still close for me. But there's just
right.
so very, very few of those nail shops, you know. Like, it's time to bring the nail shop back, you know, the nail supply house back. I think that that is well overdue, and we've been kind of like we've been dealing with it because we've been bought out by so many of the big beauty supply chains. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's room. There's room for growth. There's such a demand for it right now. Anyone that would, you know, be willing to take a little chance to just to do a nail store could probably have huge success. I mean, I certainly am seeing it from the store down in L.A. that I didn't know existed until a few months ago. Like, wow. Check this place out. Like, okay, they're still alive, and, you know, somewhere around the world there's still people who want to go actually just to shops that are just for nails. So I think that would probably be the biggest we'll see the most growth in our industry once that starts to happen again.
Nice. And what's
yeah.
next for Lisa? I know that you're in development with this show, but what else would you like to do? I know you have your hands full.
Well, I can't imagine taking on much more than Nail Olympics. My growth in Nail Olympics, Latin America, I'm going to be in hopefully Mexico and hopefully Peru. And so, you know, expanding Nail Olympics is on my agenda. Building INJA, my International Judge Association, to a globally recognized world organization. Which is going to require a lot of requirements and regulations and rules and things that I have to comply with the international laws to get passed. But I'm working on that to standardize nail competitions globally. And
mm-hmm.
My television show, I mean, that's really like once that starts to happen, I'm going to be back into producer mode and just focusing on that more than pretty much any of the other things I'll have time for. But, you know, ultimately for me, if I had my dream, yeah, I'd love to be able to, like, have a chain of beauty, you know, nail schools that would teach people how to do nails well and teach, you know, really, really just focus on how to be a good nail artist, not just how to pass a state board exam. But that will have to be put on the back burner for a while because I have all these other really important things. Not to mention I also have a company called Charisma Nail Innovations, and that company is, like got, like, 90% growth this year. So we're kind of in the middle of, like, going a little bit crazy down that road, too, with all of our expansion. And one of my newest products is called Soak-Off Gel Additive. And essentially it's like taking Soak-Off Gel to the next generation where instead of buying a color that's already pre-made, you can buy my additive. And along with one of the bottles that are designed to be measured with amber glass, and then you can take my product, which is an additive, which is like Soak-Off Gel Additive, and then you can take a nail polish off the shelf, and then you can put them in together and mix them up, and then you have your own Soak-Off Gel. So instead of having to, like, just buy one brand and one color, you can just take all the colors off of your shelf of your nail polish, and voila, you've got, like, 50 new gel colors. So right now. Yeah, and it's doing really well. So it is almost like its own little company right now. It's doing, like, its own customer business. It's taking on a whole other side of a market that we really hadn't expected to really work on. You know, it's reaching more than just a professional market. It's kind of hitting the consumer now, too. So we're working on that and working on my company and all the different things that, you know, are focusing on growing internationally with my company. So between all of that and then my international education that I do, I have no free time. I have no time at all. I do so much. I do a lot of teaching. Last year I was out of the country 200 days just teaching alone. So you can imagine I'm busy between – I'm out of the country more than I'm in the country, which is – which is cool on some levels, but extremely exhausting on other levels and very difficult to be away from my family a lot. But, you know, it's all part of it. So I kind of have to just, you know, deal with it as it goes and just embrace the opportunities as they come.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I'm just happy that in all of your busyness, you had time to be on our show.
Well, thank you. I am too. You know, fortunate, and that I didn't have to do it on an international call.
Right.
I'm so glad that I did it from my home, you know, from where I don't have to, $2 a minute. So I,
right.
I'm
exactly
that you reached out to me when you did. This has been a really nice opportunity to just share what's been going on with all of the different many projects I've been doing, and I appreciate you giving me the, you know, the platform to do it on. Thank you.
Absolutely. We thank and appreciate you as well. Now, we ask every guest every Sunday night, what is beauty to you?
What is beauty to me? Beauty to me is actually something a little bit more on the internal than I would say the external side of things. Mm-hmm. I think that your beauty really is something that you that radiates within, you know. Almost I would like to say, I hate to say it cliche, but like your charisma and how you're able to make others feel. But on a business standpoint, what do I think about beauty? When I think about beauty, I think about consumer-driven market and the fact that we are so we're so underconsidered in the big scheme of things when it comes to the economy and what's going on in the big picture and how much we are responsible for bringing in our share of the you know the whole gross bring-in. The consumer debt, the money that we're bringing in as a as an industry alone is a huge portion of import-export in itself, you know. Forget the domestic market. We're doing our part big time. With all of the other markets that are not growing in different parts of import-export, the beauty industry is driving it, and we're a very, very relevant part of that. So it's time that we're given the respect of being more than just beauty techs or nail techs or beauticians. We're helping keeping this economy going, folks. You know, like give us a little bit more credit for what we've accomplished, because we're not just people who are doing something because we're maybe not college educated or something. We're the ones that are actually driving this consumer market right now. And that's very relevant to me. Absolutely. So, yeah, I guess I have a very broad perspective of everything, as you can imagine, as you've learned in these last hour and a half. But I like to keep my options open. I'm an extremely open-minded person on so many levels. I don't look at things on one perspective. There's always many multifacets to everything, the way I view things. So, but I'm very, very grateful to be part of it, and I'm very inspired by it. I think right now is a booming, exciting time for us all, and we should really try and grab it as much as we can while it's hot, you know, and do what we can to step out and continue to make it better, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Lisa. We've really enjoyed this hour and 15 minutes that you've shared with us. We really appreciate it. Gosh, we could go on for another hour, but I know you have a trip to prepare for.
I do. I'm sure you have many other topics to hit before your show's over. I thank you for letting me dominate the majority of your time on it, and I hope I didn't ramble too much. But
No, not at all.
Thank you. Please
love
to me anytime. Good, because I'm a talker. then I did okay. Please keep me in mind. Anytime you have a hot topic, just call me. I'm always up on everything that's around here, okay?
That is wonderful. Thank you so much for that. We really appreciate it. And thank you guys for listening tonight. For those of you who enjoyed the show, go out on our Blog Talk Radio page and mark it as a favorite. Continue to follow us on our social media networks. And thank you guys for joining the tweet chat tonight as well. So everybody have a great week, and we'll see you, or you'll hear from us, next Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.